The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook if you sign up for a 2-week trial of their service. Audible has 40,000 titles available to download. For all the details, follow the links at guardian.co.uk/audible.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Never mind the audiobooks, here's the Football Weekly. And today in a packed pod, Premier League. What's the difference between Andy Carroll and the Sunderland back four? The Sunderland back four can't live with Kevin Nolan. Although, technically, they could keep on his couch if Mrs. Nolan was okay with it. Elsewhere, Man City's shocker. Mancini's men produce most lifeless performance with Wolves since Edward Cullen, who's a vampire parent. And fears over Nanny State as usual Spurs collapse versus big side features very unusual goal from the Portuguese. There's all of that, plus the Championship, our build-up to the week's big Champions League fixtures, and all the latest from Paolo Bandini, Sid Lowe, and our very special Brazilian correspondent in today's Football Weekly. Hello there, world. Here's today's Football Weekly featuring Barry Glendenning.
Hello, James.
Hello, Barry. The long-awaited return of Fernando Duarte.
Hey, hello. It's good to be back.
It is good to have you back, Fernando. And also Paul McKinney is equally long-awaited your return.
Hiya.
So much to discuss. Let's begin with another of the weekend's more interesting Premier League results. Wolves Man City. What happened there?
Well, you called this last week, didn't you?
I did, probably, didn't I?
I think you did.
I did say Wolves were due a result because they've been playing well, but they had the worst record. They had the worst form in the entire Premier League. But they get the victory, and a well-deserved victory.
Yeah, I mean, they were playing well for all their bad results. Well, in the two games I saw that, against Manchester United in the Carling Cup, they were excellent in defeat, and apparently they were excellent in defeat against Chelsea as well. And from the highlights I saw, they were kind of unlucky to lose that game. Manchester City, there's rumours of all sorts of ructions in the camp, which you were telling us about a few weeks ago.
Gone beyond the rumour now, and the way they're behaving on the field.
Well, they're actually fighting each other on the pitch.
The funny thing is, Mancini's meant to be unpopular because he's a disciplinarian, but when you look at his team, there's no sign of any discipline at all. They're all...
Well, tactically disciplined, aren't they? Oh, I mean, they do hold to very set positions. But yeah, I mean, Adebayor is just a liability, isn't he? I mean, you'd back company over Adebayor in a fight. I mean, not just in a who will win the fight thing, but he's probably more likely to have the best interest of the team.
Balotelli was a moaning and a grumbling too.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they group up this bunch of problem players and they expect it to go smoothly. I mean, it's ridiculous. If you're going to have Tevez, Adebayor, Nigel De Jong, I don't know how he is, but, you know, he's still a guy who can get into trouble. You get a lot of guys with fight tempers, including Mario Balotelli, and he wants things to be smooth? Seriously? Hmm. Who the hell are we kidding here?
It's funny, you mentioned Carlos Tevez, who was allowed to head off back to Argentina because he really hates it, basically. I don't think there's any doubt about that now in Manchester. They haven't won without him in the league since January, and he's not going to be back anytime soon, certainly not for the Manchester derby. So things are looking quite grim for Manchester City. It's funny because, 10 days ago, it seemed to be the kind of things couldn't be going any better. They were about to poach Wayne Rooney. They'd gone past United in the league, and now everyone's saying, oh, the Wolves win, is this the moment that...
Fewer points than this time last season, and Mark Hughes got sacked, etc. I mean, they've got the players, and I do think they have a defensive solidity under Mancini, but it appears to be one at the expense of kind of any creative freedom or expression in front of goal. He's got the talent there. I mean, I think the thing is, I would be looking to build your offence around Silva at the minute. He appears to be the one who can make a difference in Tevez's absence.
I was just looking back this morning at the comments under the first part of the season when a few of us said that Mancini wouldn't cut the mustard at City, and we were roundly savaged and ridiculed for it, but it very much looks like he's not cutting the mustard. He's a disciplinarian with no discipline. He had the four players who were out in the Lash last week up in Scotland, a 34-year-old at a student house party lorrying back a drink, which, you know, there's probably not that much harm in it, but it doesn't really look good. It's not a good advert for Mancini's status as a...
Well, particularly after he told them to go out and shag girls instead.
Yeah, well, maybe they did that too, I don't
know. Perhaps.
Maybe that's the only way you can do it.
Can you imagine the conversation in a student party between a footballer and somebody doing one of those Mickey Mouse degrees, which is basically what universities in the UK are reduced to now?
That
intellectually underwhelming for the Premier League footballer? Is that what you're suggesting?
I don't know. Maybe a media student, a media studies student
everywhere.
And a footballer talk. Oh my slur. God! My I would love to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah. I would. I mean, it'd be very interesting. But so, what do you think? They're going to. That's two defeats in a row now. Sack him, bring him David Platt, who's poised on the bench there.
That's the question, isn't it? I mean, there's no guarantee that by sacking him, you're going to bring in anybody who's going to be able to maintain that pace. Particularly if, you know, we look at it sort of breaking up slightly and there being a bit more stiff competition from Everton as well as Spurs, you're actually going to have to set up a good points average, and bringing in somebody else, they're going to want to establish their own ways. You might lose pace. Yeah. I think you probably need to stick with him till the end of the season.
How many points are Everton off the top four now?
Four.
Are they only 4 points off the top four? Are they?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Liverpool are only five.
I think. It's...
Did you lay that bet off, Barry, or not?
What?
Liverpool one.
No.
All right. Well.
Well, it's only with Shawnee. So.
What about Matt Jarvis for England?
What about it?
Anybody?
Well, if Sean Wright Phillips can get a game, I don't see any reason why Matt Jarvis shouldn't. But I mean, City are supposed to be good defensively, but yet they were ripped asunder by Jarvis and Stephen Hunt, who, while good, aren't exactly world beaters.
Hmm. All right then. Excellent. The Time Weir derby. What on earth happened to Sunderland?
They just didn't turn up at all.
Why? Why would they not turn up?
I don't know. Maybe they were overwhelmed. They were just totally outclassed in pretty much every department. Overrun in midfield, overrun on the flanks. Joey Barton was magnificent. Shola Amiobi played a blinder. Kevin Nolan played a blinder. Andy Carroll was brilliant. One thing I noticed yesterday, which I hadn't noticed before, is how quick he is over sort of 20 metres. He's really, really fast. I'd always thought he was a bit of a lumbering oaf, but he's got a lot of pace.
Sunderland conceded almost as many goals in this game as they had the entire season up to now.
Yeah, they have been very solid in defence, but yesterday they were appalling. I think Steve Bruce has to take a lot of responsibility, if not most of it. I think his choice of captain is very poor. Lee Cattermole is just a tinderbox waiting to go up every game. He probably should have been sent off yesterday. He was taken off before he was sent off. He doesn't really lead by example.
He's the only guy they've got who's got that real dynamism about him in his game, hasn't he? I mean, they're playing like Steve Malbronk and kind of at the base of the midfield. And then you've got players like, as you say, Nolan and Barton and, you know, even Gutierrez, looking big, strong, powerful, direct on the ball. And I think they just steamrolled him yesterday.
Mm. Kevin Nolan, in the two games since he's taken over as Andy Carroll's landlord, has scored 4 goals. Coincidence? Well, no, he's the daddy.
Good argument that Andy Carroll should live with Mr. and Mrs. Nolan forever.
Yeah.
And the little Nolan.
What's he like in the morning, do you think, Andy Carroll?
I'd say he spends a long time in the bathroom doing his hair.
It's a very interesting question, actually. But obviously there's something working there, isn't there?
I see very, you know, strong potential in that one. The force seems to be strong in that one.
Yeah.
What Bart said, I had noticed already. I mean, not in a competition. I said, wow. I thought he looked a bit like Peter Crouch, like the kind of dummy Philovere that UEFA used to in the era 2004. But no, he's quite composed and he's really fast for a guy that size.
All right, for anyone who didn't catch Fernando's little mime there, the dummy being these are inflatable figures.
Yeah.
The air flows through them and they wobble all over.
Yeah, that's Peter Crouch's nickname in Brazil.
Really?
Yeah, we call him Bonecão do Posto. There's even a funk. Bonecão do posto tá maluco, tá doidão. Balança a cabeça, os braços e o popozão, which means inflatable dummy, you're crazy, you shake your arms, your head in your bum, basically.
Right. But that's not specifically about Peter Crouch, is it?
No, but then he was named out. Yeah, no, it's not. Yeah.
Okay. Baile Funky. Yeah?
Yeah, it's part of Baile Funky rhythm, yeah.
Cool. I can't remember what we were discussing, but it can't have been as exciting as that.
Andy Carroll.
Anyway, Andy Carroll and basically Newcastle are fantastic. They're up to seventh now. How many points are they off the top four, Paul?
3 points.
They're only 3 points.
West Brom will go in fourth if they win today.
Yeah. No, hey, that's an interesting game, isn't it? West Brom against Blackpool.
No.
It is.
No.
It is.
It'll jumping on the next train, you know.
Yeah, but I think it's an interesting game.
It should be an excellent game.
Yeah, and before the start of the season, if you'd said, how about that West Brom-Blackpool game? People would have laughed at you. Anyway, let's move on then to...
They would laugh at you anyway.
Yeah, they would have. Liverpool, who got their second win in a row, and, there you go. They've now moved out of the bottom three for the first time in a month. Has Roy turned the corner?
I still think they're getting points by the scruff of the neck.
Mm.
Bolton played quite well. I mean, it's a difficult place to go to, the Reebok. And you could see there was some moments in which things weren't happening. They were like missing a lot of passes. You look that they're still kind of like a bit shell-shocked with the current situation, but at least they got the points. I mean, they need the points now. If they start dropping results along the way, this could get tricky for them. Sure. Even though it's still early doors, as Paul was saying, in terms of how distant the teams are from the top, etc.
As a Liverpool fan, how do you feel about Roy Hodgson continually airing the notion that Manchester United are going to be coming and getting your best players, Fernando Torres, Pepe Reina? It's a strange thing for him to be doing.
It is, but when was
and we might sell.
Yeah, yeah, but when was the last time a player from Merseyside went to Lancashire or vice versa? I mean, I think it was 1964, wasn't it? The last time there was a between Liverpool and Manchester United.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was 1964.
It doesn't happen.
No, well, yeah, things happened that didn't used to happen.
Yeah, and I don't think United has got enough cash to actually come in and keep on splashing, you know?
Well, it's just funny Roy Hodgson keeps coming out with this stuff. Yeah. But
he's got a lot of knockers, Roy Hodgson. And I think he can take solace from the fact that two of the best players on the pitch yesterday were Kyrgiakos and Lucas Leiva. I think if your worst players are playing well, are mm-hmm. playing at the top of the game, and you're winning points, then you've got an opportunity to improve.
Is that not because he's filled the rest of the team with players who are even worse than Lucas Leiva?
No, I think if you look at, you know, Gerard, Cole, Morales, none of them played well. And but they're all playing slightly better than they were at the beginning of the season. Torres the same, not playing well, still, you know, had a couple of nice interventions.
This is not falling over like a buffoon like he was before, Torres.
Well, he still did a bit of that.
Yeah, but it was keeping the defenders busy in a way, like they were going after him. Because before, even in the World Cup, he was laughable, unfortunately. You know,
Torres very much looks like someone who doesn't want to be in the Liverpool team. He looks seriously disaffected and bored and fed up.
I disagree. He looks really bad. But what he does is he puts in loads of energy chasing, like, down players when he's not got much of a chance of winning the ball, which suggests to me commitment. Errors come when he gets the ball into feet and he's looking to do something creative with the ball and it doesn't work. And that to me suggests something a bit more
mental.
Taps head.
Right, mental.
Just one thing in defence of Lucas Leiva.
Oh, yeah.
He's been playing fantastic for Brazil.
Yeah?
Yes. I mean, I saw...
He's called up for the Argentina game?
Yeah, he is called up for the Argentina game. He's a starter in Mano Menezes' scheme of things. And
which position does he play for Brazil?
He's a holding midfielder alongside Ramirez. They played in their midfield. He was superb against Ukraine, bossing around, tackling well, you know, distributing the game. I think the problem with him is people don't have a lot of patience, and it's Liverpool at the end of the day where people are desperately wanting that Premiership trophy.
Right, there's no pressure when you play for Brazil, of course.
It's different because, you know, it suits a bit better this side. He doesn't have to worry about everything else that's happening, including being the same team as Mascherano and Gerrard, which was, in my opinion, his biggest problem. I mean, how do you fit in that side?
He's one of four Premier League players in the Brazil side.
Yeah, I think that's a record. We got Ramirez,
mm-hmm.
Lucas, Rafael. Who's the fourth guy? I forgot.
Rafael made it in. It's not Herrera.
Sandro,
Gomez,
yeah,
is
and
it?
Sandro, yeah. No, Sandro. No, Gomez has not been called up.
And yeah. Alex?
No, he wasn't called for this one.
All right.
Yeah.
This is just a friendly with Argentina.
Just a friendly in Qatar. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, the famous Brazil World Tour thing. I mean, yep. Obviously the FAs are making a lot of money. But it's the first game, real game of football Brazil are going to play after the World Cup. Funny thing is, a lot of the good guns are still out. Michael hasn't been called. Julio César also out. But Ronaldinho is back, of all people. I think he's getting his last chance saloon.
Well, it's nice to see him getting a chance for the national side. The irony being that he's now been dropped by his club in the meantime.
Yeah. After 1 year, the last time he was called was in April 2009 for a qualifier.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see him back, but the fact is, we haven't got creative midfield players available. Ganso has an injured knee. He's recovering for surgery. And Kaká, we all know what happened. He's floating in space somewhere. So
It was unfortunate how he ended up floating in space there. Chelsea, just to finish off our part one Premier League roundup, winning at Blackburn. Chelsea 5 points clear of Arsenal. They've still only conceded 3 goals all season, and they've scored 27. They're pretty good at this football business, Carlo Ancelotti's boys. We haven't touched yet on Man United's game with Spurs, but very little to discuss from that particular fixture. Perhaps we'll find room for it in part two. Part two, everybody. At long last, Man United Spurs 2-0. But most of the debate has been all about the second goal, the Nani goal. Would it have made a difference? Barry?
I don't think so. I think Spurs would have lost anyway.
Mm.
Like they always do, apparently. The stats are terrible.
Hey, they haven't won away to Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal or Liverpool since 1993. 68 games of football. Still, eh, let's discuss that bizarre moment in the, what was it, 83rd minute, something like that?
84th, I think.
84th, yeah. Right.
Well, he didn't play to the whistle, simple.
Aurelio Gomez didn't play to the whistle.
I mean, actually, nobody did. I think they wanted, obviously, they won nil down. There was this massive incident in the area, and I think the Spurs players also thought that could have been a penalty, so you actually worried, you know, worried about pretending you were sure about not being a penalty, and basically the player handled the ball.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but if the referee didn't play, I mean, it was a combination of pressure, etc., but it happens.
What this incident has shown up more than anything else is how many people who are supposed to be experts on the game, namely people who play it professionally and comment on it professionally, don't actually understand the rules.
Go on, Barry.
The linesman raised his flag because he wanted to talk to Clattenburg. And the reason he wanted to talk to Clattenburg was to ask him, did you see the handball? Which he did. Clattenburg said, yeah, I did see the handball.
But he can't have said, I saw the handball, in which case, why didn't he penalise Nani?
Because he was playing the advantage.
There's no advantage for Spurs in Spurs.
Play advantage whenever an infringement or offence occurs. Referee should consider the following circumstances in deciding whether to apply the advantage or stop play. And one of the circumstances is the chances of an immediate promising attack.
So you're
Gomez
saying the advantage
had the
was
ball
for Spurs?
In his hands and could have thrown it out and set up an attack.
Oh, I see. So the advantage would have been for Spurs?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the rules.
If the linesman had raised the flag and waved it, then that would have been totally different. But he didn't wave it, he just raised it, which means, I want to speak to you, ref.
But still, why did he do that?
Because he wanted to speak to the ref.
How did he get a bloody microphone and say, by the way, did you see the handball? They got like microphone stuff, etc.
But if he said it, the referee, Ferdinand, would have heard.
I think Clattenburg handled it badly. He should have made it clearer that he was playing the advantage. He also booked Modric for dissent, but didn't book or send off Paul Scholes for shoving him for not giving the penalty. And then he let Rio Ferdinand listen in on his chat with the linesman.
Not only listen in, but contribute quite animatedly.
So
I wonder how that chat went. So imagine that they must both have been really self-conscious, the ref and the linesman. Like, Rio's listening, what do we say? Well, some blatant cheating by Nani. Not blatant cheating, just he must have fallen on the ball.
Mm.
And it comes in the wake of last week. There was some interesting stuff about refereeing in Scotland, where it turns out that there's a famous penalty decision overturned in a game between Celtic and Dundee United. The ref has since admitted that he lied. Him and the linesman.
This is the referee who's now retired from the game?
No, it was the linesman who retired from the game. The ref cooked up a story and dropped the linesman in it to sort of make himself look less bad. And the linesman has since retired. And the ref has been exposed as a liar, but will still get to ref games and games involving Celtic. And the Hugh Dallas, the referee's chief in Scotland, he was in on it as well. So maybe Celtic supporters who are paranoid and think refs are against them may have actually got a point.
Well, Man United then with an important win for them. And they have Bursaspor coming up in the Champions League, who have yet to get a point or even score a goal in the three games so far. Spurs, meanwhile, may host Inter without Rafael van der Vaart, who limped off with, what is it, a hamstring issue?
It looked like a hamstring, by the way, he was holding his leg.
They've
got no Gomez as well, by the way.
Yes.
Because he was sent off in the
San Siro game.
Yeah, San Siro game. So Codicini has got a very interesting
who
challenge.
Didn't impress in that match.
I think a lot falls on the shoulders of Luka Modric for this game. Mm. So he looks in really good form, but not to ask.
Gareth Bale was being touted as the kind of cure-all for Spurs' problems, but he didn't shine at Old
Trafford.
He's
been double-marked and shown inside. Mm. So, you know, there's going to be a bit of time where he's going to have to adjust his game. But also, you know, if you're double-marking one man, that gives opportunities elsewhere in the pitch and...
Well, expect Rafa Benitez to park, you know, the whole San Siro concession stands behind the goal line, isn't it?
Do you think? An ultra-defensive approach by Rafa Benitez?
Well,
we shall see. We shall see. Anyway, Van der Vaart is out. Gomez suspended, as you say. Inter have several absentees, particularly Cambiasso and Julio Cesar. So they'll be bringing in Luca Castellazzi former Sampdoria keeper, who at 35 will be making his Champions League debut. Now, joining the heated debate in today's pod is Paolo Bandini, there on the other end of this line. Hi, Paolo.
Hi, James.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm struggling to hear you a little bit, but I'm here.
Right, OK. Well, you just go off on one then about Inter and their chances at White Hart Lane.
Inter's chance at White Hart Lane. Well, after the first half against Tottenham, you would have to think, after what happened last time at San Siro, you'd have to think their chances are pretty good. But obviously, things have taken a slight turn for the worse for them in the last couple of days, in that Cambiasso's picked up a knock, Stankovic has picked up a knock, and Julio Cesar's picked up a knock. So they've got a few injury concerns. But you would have thought that Inter, certainly the way they played in the first half against Tottenham, I know things went a bit different in the second half, but I think they'd probably be fairly confident.
Fernando says that Rafa's going to park the bus. Any vehicles he can get his hands on, basically, do you think?
I find that kind of unlikely. It's not really been what Benitez has done so far this season. I mean, I suppose they did a little bit in the league games against Roma and Juventus, but really against Tottenham they came out and very quickly exposed the problems Tottenham have at the back. I think Tottenham still have those problems at the back. They're obviously short of defenders at the moment, and I think Samueletto is obviously in such a fine moment of form and enjoyed playing against them so much last time. I can't imagine that Inter will sit back when they know that there's opportunity there to be exposed.
Yeah, absolutely. In the meantime, they had a 1-0 victory away to Genoa at the weekend, a slightly fortuitous victory, but they remain in second place, 4 points behind Lazio, though. Now, we said last week about Lazio that, you know, it was all very well their start, but perhaps we'll wait until they do something like win away at Palermo before really beginning to take them seriously as title contenders. But that's what they did this weekend.
Yeah, it really is a point in which you have to start taking them very seriously, because no one has been 4 points clear this far into a Serie A season since Calciopoli. You think of all those seasons when Inter have steamrolled everyone. They've never been ahead this much this early. And beating Palermo didn't lose a single game at home last season. So, of course, that's going to be taken very seriously. I mean, I quite enjoyed the Palermo president, Zamparini. He always has something interesting to say, but he was particularly gracious afterwards, saying against Lazio's luck, it's impossible to win, and accusing the Lazio president, Claudio Lotito, of having signed a pact with the devil. So unhappy was he with the way things went. But, you know, Palermo probably could have had a penalty. Muslera in the Lazio goal had to play pretty well for them to win. I mean, I think Palermo had 23 shots in total to Lazio's 5. But credit to them. They're very solid at the moment. They keep getting these results.
Yeah, it was a lovely article by your good self on the website. Next up, anyway, for Lazio, another big game. It's the derby, but there won't be any Francesco Totti in it after he went postal.
Yeah, he's been kicking off this morning, saying he shouldn't have been sent off. But it was just such a typically Totti thing to do. He basically got clipped by Oliveira as Roma was streaming forward for what would be their second goal of the game. And he just got up and shoved him. And I mean, it was, you know,
right in front of the ref.
Of itself, it was a bit of a nothing incident. Such a totally petulant and unnecessary thing to do. You sort of reach the point with Totti where you're well past having sympathy for him because he's done it so many times.
Yeah, he was right in front of the referee as well. That was an extraordinary thing. The sense of almost entitlement about it. He walked out, shoved Oliveira right in front of the ref, and then when he got sent off, tried to chase Oliveira down the tunnel, because Oliveira got a red card as well, and had to be restrained by about 5 security guards. It was bizarre scenes, really.
I think the thing is that in some ways Ranieri probably won't even be that upset about it, because Totti hasn't scored all season. I don't think he has an especially good record, if memory serves, in the derby. So, frankly, I think it may serve Roma well for him to be suspended for a couple of games.
All right. Well, now, finally then, Paolo, a big game for Milan this midweek as they host Real Madrid. Real, who won 2-0 in the game at the Bernabeu, and Milan coming off a 2-1 defeat to Juventus on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think it was a really strange game, actually. At the beginning of it, Milan looked like they were going to absolutely steamroller Juve, and Ibrahimovic and Pato both had chances in the first few minutes. Ibrahimovic hit the post, and then there was this goal sort of from nothing from Juve. It was just a cross from Di Celia that Quagliarella headed home. And then after that, Milan just seemed to really fall apart for a really long time. And Juventus sort of slowly built and built and built, and eventually got a second goal through Del Piero, which now puts him above Boniperti as their top all-time scorer in Serie A. And it wasn't an particularly impressive performance by Juve in a sense, in that they didn't blow you away, but they were efficient and they looked like a team. Whereas Milan just did that same thing, where as soon as they found the first sign of adversity. They just completely fell apart and stopped working for each other. And it was just Ibrahimovic on his own up front, trying to beat everyone on his own.
How bad do you think it's going to go against Real Madrid?
I think they'll get beaten again. It was only two goals in Madrid, so I'm not necessarily expecting them to get slaughtered. But I think that Real Madrid are a better team right now, and so I expect them to lose.
Yeah. All right, Paolo, thank you so much for that.
Can I cut in with one more thing that I forgot to mention to producer Ben beforehand, but I think is worth raising? Antonio Cassano. If you guys are aware of this, but Cassano over the weekend had a falling out with the Sampdoria president Riccardo Garone, and over the weekend Sampdoria effectively let it be known to the press that they were trying to have his contract rescinded, as in completely have him released, because the president was so offended over what had happened.
Paolo
tried to apologise, and this morning he's offering to take reportedly offering to take a pay cut anywhere in the region of 30-50% just to stay at Sampdoria this season.
Yeah, it's not surprising the president was offended. The conversation went more and more more or less like this: Cassano, I'm not going to go and turn up for this awards evening at the local hotel. Garone, please come by and just pick up the award. You don't have to stay for dinner. I'm not going, says Cassano, to that shitty hotel. And don't raise your voice at me. I'm not raising my voice at you, Cassano. Shut up, you f***ing old man. I'm not going to that shit of a hotel.
Yeah, that's pretty much got it. And I think that there was possibly a fair few more bits of colourful language as he stormed the dressing room, because apparently there were fans waiting outside who could hear him swearing.
Okay, Champions League. Do you know, I think,
can I say something about the Champions League? It's my annual rant about how bloated and rubbish it is. Lyon, Inter, Arsenal, Barca, Bayern Munich, Chelsea and Real Madrid can all qualify for the second round with two games to spare this week.
That's true.
That's wrong. It's not right. It should be straight knockout. Now, obviously, you're going to have people who pretend everything is great about football and blah, blah, blah. They're going to say, oh, well, it matters whether you top the group or come second. It doesn't make a difference. No, it doesn't.
Of course it does.
What difference does it make?
It means that you won't be facing one of those other teams who top the group.
Yeah, but...
that's going to help.
It's not really.
Well, what you could do is have it a bit like the Euro qualifiers, whereby the team who top the group do go through and the rest are in a bit of a second-place lottery. I'm not saying I'm blind to, you know, your point that it's more exciting and thrilling as a knockout. I'm just saying that it does make a difference. But well done to those teams who've done enough good work early on that they could go through Inter, Arsenal, Barcelona, Munich, Chelsea, Real Madrid and Lyon. Lyon, Barry.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've won three straight. They're playing Benfica. Tell you what, the French, they're coming. Valencia are going to be hosting Rangers, looking to get to second place in that group with Manchester United, Bursaspor. Roma, who are bottom of the group with Bayern in, are really in trouble. They got beaten last time out by Basel at home.
Do you want any interesting Valencia Rangers-related stats?
Boy, do I.
Valencia, in three games so far, have only been caught offside once. And Stephen Naismith is the most fouled player in this year's Champions League so far, or this season.
Sorry, I wandered off in the middle of that. What was the second bit?
Stephen Naismith of Rangers is the most fouled player in the tournament this season.
Really?
So, to date, yes.
All right. I didn't mention Arsenal taking on Shakhtar Donetsk, who will be looking to avenge their 5-1 drubbing. Of course. Sid Lowe is in Spain. Where else would he be? And he's going to be talking to us momentarily about the Spanish perspective on their midweek to come and what's just been happening over the weekend. Right then, Sid Lowe in Spain. On the phone, Sid. Classic Sid. Hello.
Classic. Uncut, rough and ready, as it should be.
It's funny, isn't it? We were just discussing whether to Skype you or phone you, but the Skype wasn't working, so that pretty much settled the question. But it did occur to me, it's like when you know they have those old masterpieces and then some art historian comes in with a bit of ethanol and cleans them up and they're suddenly all gaudy and sparkly and everybody goes, we quite like the kind of fuzzy old one. That's very much the way I think about our conversations, Sid. Today we're going with the, you know, battered old master as opposed to bright and gaudy. Fresh as the day it was painted one. Anyway, Sid, I'll get on with it, shall I?
I'm on vinyl. I'm on vinyl for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Canvas was more the thing I was thinking of, but whichever format you prefer. Sid, we were just discussing before you joined us Real Madrid's trip to the San Siro to take on Milan. Real Madrid have never won at the San Siro. There's probably never been a better time to try.
They think so, that's for sure, because they're playing really very well at the moment, very, very intense. There's a lot of movement with the front three or four who are playing really well. They were actually trailing to Hercules at the weekend on Saturday night. It's the first time they've even been behind this season in La Liga, but they responded really well. Cristiano Ronaldo got two more goals. They're, as you can imagine, everybody's going completely bonkers over him. But it wasn't just about Ronaldo. That one of the other really significant factors, and certainly the one that's occupied people more than anything else, was the fact that Karim Benzema came on and made quite a big difference. He had a shot deflected, which led to the second goal to give Madrid the lead, created the third for Cristiano Ronaldo. So there's a sense of him being slightly, well, resuscitated is the word that they're using. He's come back from the dead, because, of course, Mourinho used that phrase about anyone letting down in the Copa del Rey would be dead to him. And the media ran with that and assumed that he was talking about Benzema. So Benzema then played very well at the weekend. But all round, looked very good. They looked physically very strong, very quick, very intense. One or two question marks, because they're yet to play the really big teams in Spain, something which Barcelona have done, apart from Real Madrid. But I think they're going into the game in Milan really quite confident.
Yeah, not surprised. Ronaldo's got 10 goals now in 4 matches. So startling stuff. You say they haven't played the really big teams yet in Spain. Of course, the question is, who are the really big teams in Spain, apart from Real Madrid and Barcelona? And after years of complaining about it being a two-team league, it's almost become like a two-player league now, Sid.
Yeah, well, that's the fear. I mean, I say, who are the big teams? Well, what I meant by that was that the Barcelona have played Sevilla, they've played Atletico Madrid, they've played Valencia, they've played Athletic Bilbao. And the problem is that they've beaten them all. Real Madrid haven't played any of those, so maybe they haven't been given that test. But the fear now is, much like last year, that it might be a case of Madrid and Barcelona just being too good for everyone else. I mean, remember that last year, the gap between first and third was, I think I'm right in saying, 30-something points. Anyway, put it this way, third place Valencia were closer to the relegation zone in terms of points than they were to winning the league last year. And they were third. And there's a fear that the same will happen this year. It's taken a bit longer. This is week 9, and it's the first time that Madrid and Barcelona have been first and second in La Liga, which is 8 weeks longer than it took last year. But it does look like it's happening. All of those teams that theoretically should challenge Madrid and Barcelona didn't manage to win this weekend. So Villarreal didn't win, Valencia didn't win, Atletico Madrid didn't win. Sevilla were battered 5-0 by Barcelona. I think that's the big key in all of this. And as you say, there's a real sense of looking at it in terms of Messi and Ronaldo, and it's fascinating, the battle between the two, although there is a risk that it will become a bit tedious as well.
Right, Messi's got 41 goals in 42 Liga games, Ronaldo 38 in 38. Barcelona, I don't know why I've got this funny feeling, they might have some trouble, Sid, away to Copenhagen. Oh, no, they're at home to Copenhagen. No, they're away. Yeah, away to Copenhagen. Yeah.
They were travelling. They flew this morning in a private jet owned by the Portuguese side, Sporting Braga. I don't quite know why.
That's a curious one, isn't it? How tough a game awaits them, though? Because it wasn't that cut and dry, was it, the first leg? And it required a little bit of naughtiness from the Barcelona substitute keeper, did it not, to prevent Copenhagen when they were homing in on goal for what could have been a very decisive moment in the match?
Yeah, Pinto's actually been given a 2-game ban by UEFA for that. For those who didn't see it, Pinto, the goalkeeper with the tremendous hair, whistled as, I can't remember which player it was now, was dashing through, and the player stopped and didn't continue. And of course, that broke down what was a very, very good counter-attack, because he was pretty well clean through one-on-one with the keeper. And Pinto's been given a 2-game ban. What that does suggest is that all those players who get booked for kicking the ball away after the whistle's gone should actually continue to do that, because it's worth the risk.
Yeah, I mean, playing to the whistle, that's what he did, but funny. Anyway, do you think there's any danger for Barcelona in that game? Because if Copenhagen win, they'll actually go ahead of Barcelona in the group.
Yeah, well, in that sense, there is a danger. There's a feeling that Barcelona are playing well enough that they should be okay. I also think that, in fact, weirdly, it's not just that they think they should be okay. There's a slight sense and a hope, certainly, that Barcelona can win that game and more or less put the qualification to bed, and then the last two games not have to worry about it. In particular, of course, because the one thing that still hangs over Barcelona to some extent is a question mark of the physical fitness of the players. They were very, very pleased by the fact that they beat Sevilla 5-0 at the weekend, not just because they beat them, but because they were leading so early. And that meant that Xavi Hernandez, who's the player that needs protecting more than anyone else, was taken off after 6 minutes. So he got 30 minutes of rest on the bench. The same was true of Puyol. I think that was more because of the yellow card. So Barcelona are trying to protect their players a little bit. I think Xavi probably will play against Copenhagen, but I think Barcelona are a little nervous about him playing midweek as well as at the weekend. So they would rather he didn't have to, but I think they're going to run the risk.
Sidlo in Spain. A couple of posts. Cop One Hunhagen, appropriately enough, says, I'm a little confused. Does Simon Burton saying that he's not black now make him the white man's Burton? Or does it mean that he's not? I'm not sure, actually, about that one. Championship Bluebird 88 says, please, 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 can we get some championship chat on the next one? And then he goes on about Cardiff and their 4-0 victory over Leeds at Elland Road. Hey, Leeds had a big result this weekend, didn't they? Anyway, Paul McInnes, you know about this kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, Cardiff followed up that 4-0 win with another, you know, pretty comprehensive 3-1 win over my side, Norwich, at the weekend. And Norwich, we've been playing quite well, playing above ourselves a little bit, and we gave them a game, but I think it was 2 goals for Jay Bothroyd.
Yeah, he's on fire.
Yeah, 10 in the league now, witting him in with a penalty there. They've just got so many goal threats. You know, that's we didn't even have to talk about Bellamy for this game, and Chopra had another good game. So I think, you know, Cardiff now, as opposed to a month ago when everyone was talking about QPR, Cardiff are now the team that look to be setting the pace. QPR, meanwhile, fourth consecutive draw. Jamie Mackie, the guy we were all raving about last time I was on the pod, hasn't scored in 7 games. Oh. So they're falling back into this pack. My feeling is Cardiff will be very difficult to stop. I think we might see Portsmouth come up as well. They're a team with admittedly a small squad, but a squad packed with Premiership experience. And then you're going to have these teams with good squads. Swansea, who made short work of Palace at the weekend. Derby, who butchered Watford 4-1.
Again, not literally.
No. It was definitely a metaphorical thing.
Right, okay.
And
Swansea, though, you say. There are two Welsh sides in the Premier League, potentially.
Well, could be. And we've got the South Wales Derby next weekend. So it's a big round of fixtures next weekend. But then there's also Reading. Came back from 3-1 down to beat Doncaster, who are also a good footballing side. And then Coventry are up there, Norwich are up there. It's still, again, a very open league. And I think whoever's got more quality, bigger squad, that will tell in the end.
Sven got his first home win with Leicester.
Yeah.
Tony Brobery's debut on the Borough bench didn't go so happily.
No. I mean, I think, you know, it's with Borough, they started well. The big lump that is Chris Boyd got the opener. But Bristol have some good players. They've started the season badly, but Albert Adoma is a good winger. He got the equaliser. Marvin Elliott's a great player. He scored the winner. So, you know, it's a competitive league. It's definitely a competitive league. Lots of skill in there. I think Middlesbrough, they've got a big squad, but they're continuing to struggle. Leicester, meanwhile, doing all right. I'd just like to say a quick word about League One.
All right. Before you do it, can you just confirm that in Swansea's 3-0 win away to Crystal Palace, rock bottom Crystal Palace, Edgar Davies was playing at left back?
I think I can confirm that for you. It's where he's basically been playing all season.
All right, okay. All right. Sorry, Paul, you go ahead. League One.
Yeah, League One. Just a quick mention for Brighton, because they are pulling away with this division already. They're 8 points clear.
Yeah, we did that already, actually.
Oh, in another show. Did you know, though, that Maurizio Tirico
is
his assistant manager?
Gus Poyet.
Yeah. So it's this. You forget about all these players who were once names and now kind of slowly ploughing their trade in coaching.
Yeah, 8 points clear now of second place Huddersfield. Paul Ince debuting on the Notts County bench with a 3-1 defeat to Southampton.
Yeah. He didn't debut on the Notts County bench because he's still serving. He was serving the fifth of a 5-game ban he got from last time he was managing MK Dons. So he debuted in the stand.
And Saints are showing the Nigel Adkins effect.
In your face, Jimbo.
Yeah, I tell you what, I have been served again.
There's some really good players in the Championship, actually. There's Scott Sinclair is one of the buys of the season. Swansea bought him from Chelsea. That guy, QPR, Tarabat, Jay Bothroyd. Good division.
David James.
Super. That's it then. You know what? As suddenly as it had started, it is over. Today's pod. Many thanks, Paul McInnes. Sterling stuff. Fernando Duarte.
Hey, always a pleasure. Come
on. What a sumptuous return to the pod that was.
Thank you.
And Barry Glendenning. Lovely, lovely, lovely to hear from you all. And you, producer Ben. We'll be back on Thursday with Football Weekly Extra, looking back at the midweek Champions League games and forward to what looks set to be a very, very, very exciting weekend of matches. Perhaps you'll join us for that. In the meantime, I'm James Richardson saying goodbye.
Don't forget to start your free 14-day trial of audible.co.uk and to download your free audiobook. Head to guardian.co.uk/audible.
It was Claudio Reina, and then last week it was Fernando Torres, or it might have been Reina. Well, his name is Claudio, actually. It bloody is, Claudio. Go and frigging looking it up.
Jose.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm...
Yes, it is an American player, not a Spanish goalkeeper. No, anyway, you want to rephrase that?
Yeah, I'm confused about somebody else.
I think we found this episode's hidden track.
The Guardian.